Hello, heroes, and welcome to Session Zero, a podcast exploring role-playing through psychological perspective. I'm Porter Green.
And I'm Steve Discont.
And today we'll be discussing bleed.
Hey, heroes. Steve and Porter here, popping in at the opening for a moment to let you know that today's episode is the second half of a two-part special interview with game developer Emily Carabas. We highly suggest checking out the episode before this so that you can get the full experience.
Also, some of you may remember us in our first episodes talking about my role-playing foray into the world of Dragon Ball Z. Well, we've now shared all about it over on the One Shot Network Secret Archive. You should go check it out.
On an additional serious note, one of our network hosts has been facing some real hard times right now. Earlier this year, Jeff from System Mastery had to choose between getting health insurance for himself or his newborn daughter. It goes without question which one he chose.
A few weeks ago, he had to have an extended visit to the hospital and has bills that he can't afford. That's why we're asking for heroes to contribute to a GoFundMe campaign to help him and his family out. You can find his campaign at bit.ly/livingmastery. Any amount will be a big help.
Thank you, heroes. And with that, on with the show.
This makes me think of various communities that have social mores that try and fight against that. Mm-hmm. I remember in some narrative online role playing where there was another channel where you could talk outside of character. And there was one person who was and just an amazing villain writer being really nice and cheerful in that channel, to help have people have another experience of them so that they weren't just being cast as the horrible villains that they were. And I've seen people do that in LARPs as well, just sort of afterwards check in and say, hey, that was so fun to play with you. Hope that was all right. And I think that's becoming something that, obviously, we might talk about this later, but there's a lot more techniques that people use very intentionally to counteract that, particularly in live action play, but also at tabletop. There's a lot of safety techniques people use. Mm-hmm.
So I think that's a really interesting way, though, to going about addressing bleed or maybe mitigating it, reducing it. You know, it seems like there's a number of different potential strategies that players or even GMs or LARP runners can use as a way to either mitigate their own bleed or mitigate the bleed of their players. You know, you just mentioned one of the ones that I noticed Sarah Lynn Bowman proposed, which would be out-of-game socializing. So a way that players can have a reminder that the people they're interacting with are people, not their characters, whether that might be doing dinner at a diner after a LARP. I think the classic example is vampire LARPers going to Denny's at midnight.
The only time to go to Denny's.
Agreed. No question. But even what you said for online play, the example you just gave of people having an out-of-character room where people can be jovial, especially if someone is playing the dark and dastardly villain.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. And we instinctively seek to contextualize, right? If you think about like adjacent communities to gaming, like, for example, fan fiction, there's often people who like to write like really dark, dire, scary, intense, hurt, comfort, any kind of thing that's hard to read. But then outside of the actual product, you have goofy conversations and silly side off-topic blogs and all of those sort of ways of interacting with each other as people. And I think that same is true with gaming.
So would that be using writing, it sounds like, as a strategy for also reducing bleed?
Sure. I mean, you could, like, writing is in journaling about the experience. Writing is in having other contexts. Writing is in distancing yourself by having it written down instead of spoken or enacted.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Emily, go ahead.
You go for it.
I was going to say, like, I find that for me at least, there's the least likely going to be bleed from something that's a written RP, so like an online text-based versus then tabletop versus then LARPing. So like the more of my emotions and senses and embodiment is involved in the process of the gaming that I'm doing, the more likely I am to have bleed.
That's definitely, I think, the progression that I experienced too. It's interesting to know what kinds of mechanisms in our hearts and minds that make that happen. Mm-hmm. And if it's different for others.
Oh, absolutely. Emily, what are some other strategies that you can think of that are really useful for managing bleed?
There were some proposed by Sarah Lynn Bowman and that are used in broader communities of LARP. A lot were adopted in the Nordic LARPing communities, and there's a growing awareness and adoption of safety techniques in other communities, like in North America. And one
real
of them,
quickly,
sure.
Just for clarification, when you refer to the Nordic LARP community, is there something particularly special about the Nordic LARP community for those of our listeners who might not be familiar with them?
Sure. It's a term that's a blanket term, which, like anything else, is helpful and not helpful. LARPing is very popular in the Nordic countries, in Finland, Norway, Sweden, and Denmark particularly. And it has a history of a lot of people who are interested in the hobby talking to one another and getting together. So there are books and essays that have been published for the last over 20 years. There's a particular event called Nodal Point. It's known in four different languages because it's held in four different countries and they rotate every year. It's a really, really interesting, fun time. And so there are the term Nordic LARP is one that often is used to refer to people who participate in that event and others. And there's a tremendous amount of variety of LARP in the Nordic countries, in these Nordic countries. And Nordic LARP often also is a shorthand for art LARP and like experimental or edgy. And so just know that there are a lot of different kinds of LARP that encompasses. But it's been very influential over the last 10 years or so. There's been a lot of people from America who've gone there and learned and adopted things and vice versa. And so that's what I was referring to.
Cool. Thank you. So you said that in the Nordic LARP scene that there are some strategies that they've come up with or that are actively being used for managing bleed.
One of them that I was thinking of was de-rolling, which is after a game has been played, they often have short exercises afterwards that might entail talking to people about what happened to sort of give yourself a little breather. I think that's called debriefing often. And sharing in specific ways that help people integrate their experience and also get a little distance from it. And then de-rolling is one particular activity where you might have some of your costume or something that represents your character that you take a turn just putting down or setting aside, or maybe everyone does it at once, but it allows you to have a physical act that represents leaving the role. So that can help you sort of transition out of whatever you are experiencing and into what comes next and back into your normal life.
Interestingly, debriefing is straight out of psychology, actually. Like talking about what you just experienced and making meaning out of it is a really common practice people use in emotionally intense situations to try and help people not develop a wound, like a traumatic wound, or experience it as like a stuck or a hurting experience.
What about de-rolling? You know, I know, especially for you and the framework that you come from in psychology, looking at things through their symbology and their impact in meaning-making is very important. Mm-hmm. I'm curious about whether de-rolling either feels familiar to you or what your thoughts were on that.
Well, I think it's a great symbolic way of stepping between two places. That's not one that you see much in the context of clinical work, just because if you're taking on a role in your clinical scenario, it's usually like a very personal one right out of your life. So you don't really have like costumes per se. But I think the things like the empty chair as one of those really classic psych exercises where you imagine somebody that's important to you is in the chair and then you talk to it as though they were there, or you sit in it to experience how they might experience what you just said, could be sort of linked to this whole idea, right, of de-rolling, embodying, where the chair serves as the prop and the gateway into and out of a particular emotional space. So yeah, all symbols are really powerful, and humans really respond to visual symbols. That's why we like ritual. That's why we like costumes.
Mm-hmm. And it feels like that'd be significantly more impactful or maybe even more relevant when you're in a LARP scenario versus, say, at a tabletop. Because I feel like a tabletop, you know, as we had mentioned earlier, there seems to be that gradation of embodiment that leads to potentially the increased likelihood of bleed.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So it seems like de-rolling it could be beneficial, but it may not be as beneficial if you're in a, I guess, traditional tabletop scenario or setting versus being in an embodied LARP.
Absolutely. I mean, it goes back to like the sort of biopsychosocial piece of all of this, right? Because when we're using our body, one of the things we know about humans is that if we fake it, eventually we will make it, right? We will eventually begin to feel the way that we're pretending to feel because we're using our body and all of the parts of our metabolism and, you know, our actual heart and our actual lungs and our actual muscles to do all of those things. which means that if I, for example, hunch my shoulders over and to get in a really small space and rock my body and talk in a small voice and breathe shallowly, after about 10, 15 minutes, I'll probably start to feel anxious.
Yeah.
And that kind of gets back to kind of how we were touching earlier on this idea that there are biological causes for bleed and that there are biological ways that we can experience bleed.
Mm-hmm.
Because just in that sense that you're physically manifesting the typical behaviors and symptomology of anxiety might then become interpreted as actual anxiety or might lead you down that path to actually experiencing it.
Mm-hmm. That's where this comes up in acting too, to go way back very much earlier, is the reason that actors talk about the idea of bleed is this, just this very sense that if you play something long enough, you start to think like that thing until you take some time away. Like that makes me think of Anthony Hopkins talking about playing serial killers and how he took a break from acting for a while to recover from sort of embodying and being in that really hard mindset of a very intense, you know, sociopathic person.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, you know, and it sounds like that was a really useful way for him to at least be able to mitigate things for himself of the character bleeding in.
Mm-hmm.
Or I'm sorry, in this case, it would be bleed out. My apologies.
Yeah, definitely bleed out.
Yeah. Emily, are there any other strategies that you could think of for managing bleed that our listeners or that the heroes might be able to take forward and be able to use for their own benefit?
Sure. There's a variety of in-game signaling devices that help you to communicate while you're playing. One of them is what's called or referred to as the OK check-in, where if you're having an experience, what you're playing, and I think this is typically used for live action play, but it certainly could be used at the table. If you're having maybe an intense interaction with someone, and you are not quite sure if they're okay. Like, you can see that they're expressing a lot of emotion, maybe negative or sad emotion, and you just want a quick way to see if the person is all right and they're just, you know, in it. You can just flash your hand in a hand signal that might be okay, or to ask them if they are okay. And then their response, and everyone obviously would know this ahead of time, so you're not throwing this in where someone doesn't know how to respond, would be to either put their thumb up and to say that they're okay, or have it be sort of in between or down. And in the communities or the events that I've been a part of, basically you're totally free to respond however you want, but if it's sideways or down, the person who's checking in should interpret that to mean that maybe things aren't okay. And even if they can't say, oh, it's terrible, and they're just kind of metz with the middle, that's the point where you might want to take a break or step it back a little or check that back in. But if it's a thumbs up, go for it. And then there's another set of devices that people use, the red, green, yellow. And I know that came from another community. It might be from bondage play. I don't know the context.
Definitely from BDSM.
Okay,
welcome
great.
Welcome to our first BDSM call out on our show.
Woo! Isn't the first one really?
Yes.
Wow. It will not be the last.
And my understanding of how it's used is it's similar, but you have something maybe on your badge that has a green dot and a yellow dot and a red dot. And that helps you. You can point to that to ask somebody how they're doing. And actually, I'm not sure how you signal to ask them, but you can hit the green if you want to let people know that you like what's happening, or the yellow if you want it to maybe slow down a little bit, or red to say back off. And maybe at that point you could take a break from what you're doing. And just to throw in, one of the challenges that has been in adopting these that I haven't necessarily always experienced, but I've definitely seen talked about and other people have experienced that I know of, is that oftentimes you might have the tools and no one uses them.
Mm. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, and so I think that comes up to some of the things we've talked about in previous episodes about, gosh, it goes to our first episode with our episode about group dynamics, about establishing those norms,
mm-hmm.
and kind of working with your group, be it at the table or be it within the LARP setting, that you normalize and establish these expectations that these are the rules that we use when we're here at the table, or here's what we use when we are in this group. I've talked about before, you know, with playing in LARPs with Fifth Star, and I can tell you that every session that our Innomine game starts, they always demonstrate the OK check-in. It is demonstrated at the start of every session so that anyone who is there who's not used it before, is familiarized with it, but also to normalize its use for those who have already been playing in the game. And so that is seen as this is highly supported and highly expected of the people running it. That the LARP runners expect that you will be using this and they want you to use it.
I think, too, it's always more important for people to feel safe and, or at least, you know, within the bounds of comfort and security than it is to be like perfectly in character or to maintain the magic or the scene. So if you really feel in a moment that somebody might be stuck or somebody might be frozen, because one of those options when you get overly anxious or overly stressed is freezing, it might make sense to just be like, hey, man, are you okay? Mm-hmm. And take the break. Because this is a thing we do for fun and experience, not that's like, you know, life or death. So we should definitely prioritize that and remember that it is totally okay if you don't remember to do an okay check-in and just tap someone on the shoulder and say, hey, you've been crying for 25 minutes. Are you okay?
Yeah. And if they say, like, this was in character, I'm so happy, like, I'm doing this, great. Fantastic. If they're not, do the due diligence.
Mm-hmm. And if anybody running a LARP or a game ever gets mad at you for checking in with somebody or says that you ruined it by doing that, that's a red flag.
Ooh, yes. Mm. Super red flag.
Yeah.
Because we try and break these procedures to make it easier and to preserve the game as much as possible. But ultimately, this is a hobby, right? It shouldn't be hurting people or making them feel too scared.
Well, I think a safe group is ultimately going to be a happy group.
Mm-hmm. Trust actually makes room for more vulnerability. So it's a lot easier to go in and play a character where you do cry for 20 minutes or where you role play close to a trauma you've personally experienced when you know that you can trust the people there to have your back and to know that if you tap out, you're doing it for a reason.
Oh, I think this is going to lead into our eventual episode on psychological safety at the table.
Which is a whole other long conversation.
Oh, yeah.
For sure. Because safety makes trust. We can't have trust without feeling like we can be vulnerable.
Exactly. And in a lot of our play historically, I think we just pushed that content away. So we didn't have to deal necessarily with intimate or vulnerable pieces of ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't entirely get that out of there. But as we move into more commonly playing stories that are just closer to our normal experience and what we feel afraid about, it's important to have these tools and to be able to build that trust with each other to be able to do it.
So in that case, is bleed a bad thing? Emily, what do you think?
It seems very situational. Mm-hmm. It seems that bleed that isn't managed well or that goes beyond what you're able to handle can be a very negative experience for people. But I also definitely know that that strength of emotion and that experience that you feel is something that people court and that is seen as a very strongly positive thing. And it helps, like some people look to it to fuel their play, to help them have a powerful experience. So I think it's both.
Mm-hmm.
And it really depends on the context.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think that we seek peak experiences when we're gaming, right? I think we talked about that a bit in our emotions episode too. We seek like a strong feeling of connection or a strong feeling of joy or a strong feeling of awe or fear or whatever it is that the story is promoting. And to feel that, you kind of need to have some bleed. You need to be present with that character in that moment to feel it with your body. But also if you have like, for example, a trauma history or are in the middle of some like really stressful life event, you may also put yourself in a situation where you're vulnerable. So very situational.
There are a variety of games, particularly ones written in the 70s, I think, that were, I don't even know what the name of them is, but the Blue Eye Brown Eye experiment. And there's one called Star Power I got to take part in the 2000s and that were written, and they're emulation games, I guess. Mm-hmm. You know, they're trying to put you in a situation where you're simulating being a prisoner in a prison, or you're in a situation where there are people who have power over you and you're trying to figure out what to do. And it,
so like the LARP, the prison.
Right. Right. And those, oh my God, nightmare, train crack, like huge masses of people having all kinds of horrible, bleedy emotional experiences is like, seems normal for those games.
Mm-hmm.
At least the few that I'm aware of from that period, it seems to me like they just weren't really, they wanted people to have a strong experience and they weren't really cognizant of just how powerful a thing they were unlocking, particularly because it was for a group of people to have this powerful, competitive, negative often experience together. Friends of mine talk about an experience where they were in youth group for their church, and this was done as like a bonding experience. One of these games, I don't know which one. And afterwards, they literally had people weeping. They had, you know, they were trying to jump in and help their friends, and the counselors were trying to like do damage control, and it just like totally like crashed out. So that's one of those situations where you get the amp up, and then you don't understand what you're doing, or you're giving this tool to people who don't understand what the context is that they're doing to these people that they have fun, you know, light experiences with, or maybe even deep experiences with, but then they're throwing them into this maelstrom and then expecting them to just walk out mm-hmm. without having had a perhaps traumatic experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you... heroes, and for everybody here who's on the podcast, really want to see that in action, you can Google video of the Blue Eyes Brown Eyes game. It's a really common and well-known sort of tool for teaching minority stress, where you mm-hmm. set one side of the room as privileged over the other based on the color of their eyes, and then treat them accordingly. And it can be very intense just watching, especially like a classroom full of folks that have a lot of privilege experience that for the first time. And like, of course, the 70s, they weren't great at thinking about aftercare or making sure everyone was safe when they did these exercises. So it can often be really intense.
Well, and I remember reading research about one of the Blue Eyes, Brown Eyes scenarios where the children, it's either children or the teenagers who were put under the scenario where they were the disadvantaged ones, mm-hmm. where they started to regress in skills that they had they'd either demonstrated mastery in or they demonstrated learning before. Mm-hmm. So where before they were either confident and able to speech, they started seeing reductions in those skills or no longer demonstrating the skill that they're being expected to demonstrate anymore.
And that is actually what a trauma response looks like for a young person, is regression. And for anybody, as your confidence is shaken, it's harder to do things that you've learned. And that's a really important thing to think about when you're thinking about bleed and how you want to play characters too, is that while bleed is not inherently triggering of trauma reactions, you can run into a trauma trigger through experiencing bleed because you have unexpectedly come across something that was really personal to you. A really good example of that from my own tabletop experience is that I played a character in my wife's sci-fi game, which is a magic user called a Drift Rider. There was also a robot. Now, that's technically impossible in that world, but because this particular robot was ensouled, basically a level 5 droid, she had a mechanical accident and became ensouled. It's a whole, like, sub part of this world that's really kind of cool that Shelby is exploring.
Cosmology.
Yeah. She's really good at spirituality and cosmology stuff, but neat. The character's difficulty between I'm a robot, but also I have this entire life of memories that were programmed into me, and that's my life and my person, was intensely triggering for me of my own dysphoria, my own gender dysphoria. So I would play the character on like a Saturday for 6 hours and then be fine. But then by like the middle of the week on Tuesday, I was just like lost in my own sort of struggle with who I am and what I am and what does it mean and what's real. And every single week, it was just like ramping up and ramping up. And I ended up having to retire the character because her struggle between self and identity and my own was just too close. And you never would have thought of it on the surface. It wasn't an obvious trigger. I mean, looking back on it, sure, it's super obvious. And I was just like floored by how impactful it was.
Well, that's the frustrating thing about hindsight being 2020 is we mm-hmm. can look back and go, oh, right, that makes perfect sense. But in the moment, why you're not, it's not going to occur to you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And we're drawn to things for a reason. And the reasons might be heading us towards our wounds and we don't realize it. Mm-hmm. So it's hard to predict, and it's great that you recognize that and were able to retire that character and let it go so that you didn't have to keep having that experience.
Mm-hmm. And that's one of the cool values of narrative too, that was being able to play up against a wound and process it in that way.
Yeah.
But the key there is doing it by choice.
Absolutely.
So in that case then, we're talking about some really negative experiences that come from bleed. What about positive experiences of bleed? It seems like there are a lot of scenarios that we've just gone through. You know, trauma is rough and trauma mm-hmm. is difficult, and dealing with things that are psychological stressors, especially when we are doing I say it glibly, but doing pretendy fun times mm-hmm. is really difficult. But there's gotta be positive takeaways, I think, of bleed too. You know, one of them I like to think about is kind of what brought us into this conversation, Emily, which is how bleed can bring people emotionally and romantically together. That it feels like there are definitely positive emotions and positive experiences that can come from bleed.
For sure.
I know that if I were to look at my own examples, there were games and LARPs that I played in with people who I barely knew. And through whatever reasons, our characters came together and started regularly interacting. And so from what I perceived as a fondness that my character was having for their character, I started developing a fondness for that character, which in turn starts developing a fondness for that player.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have a common narrative that you share, both in a sense on a meta level, because you have a shared narrative about the experience of these characters interacting, and that can help build and foster a friendship.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, if you consider any character is a part of the self, right? So you're learning bits of somebody, a metaphor for somebody in a way.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting that people who play sports together, they can bond in similar ways,
mm-hmm.
and they don't have this layer of fiction between them. So if you have a buddy that you play squash with and you folks just have a fun time, you wouldn't think, oh, well, I don't really know what they're like because of the way they hit the ball. You just think you know them. And it is true that we don't always know people. We can play games with them and have really intense experiences with them. And then there's still this distance because it was fictional,
mm-hmm.
and it wasn't us. And sometimes you then have the right context, maybe even the social context, for it to bridge and go beyond. Like, you know, maybe you go out and have dinner afterwards and then you're like, oh, hey, and there's all these other things that we have in common. And now I can say I like you. But it's funny that the narrative brings us together and then it also puts this distance in as well.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like setting up that cycle. You said like putting up that wall. So in a sense, putting up a psychological barrier can be really useful then to maybe help foster a positive takeaway from Bleed.
Yes.
It feels like that's everything that we have to cover for this topic. We've covered a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Emily Porter, we've covered a lot today.
It's a big topic.
So much.
Without a question. You know, before we officially part ways for this session, Emily, I was wondering, is there anything that you'd like to promo or anything that you'd like to share with the heroes?
Sure. If people are interested in the romance trilogy that I've talked about, you can find it at my website. My game company is Black and Green Games. So the website is blackgreengames.com. And you can see Romance Trilogy and a bunch of other games that I've written and published and put out there for sale. And also a bunch of other games that are free or that are in process or that you can just download and check out. So I invite your viewers and listeners to go to blackgreengames.com and give it a whirl.
Awesome. And we'll make sure to include a link to that in the show notes.
Absolutely.
Anything else that you'd want to share?
I really want to thank you for allowing me to take part. I'm your first guest, I understand. So
our first guest?
Yes, absolutely. You are the first.
So I just want to say a really deep thank you to both of you, both for letting me participate and also for doing this work. The psychological elements of gaming are really important to me. There were some of the things that drew me to role-playing and have, to me, seemed like some of the most powerful elements of what we do. So I'm so glad that you're both bringing your professional expertise and insight to this. So thank you. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you for being part of this.
Thanks for coming.
Well, in that case,
I think we've pretty much come to the end of our hour, as it were.
Yeah. In that case,
see you in the next session. If you've been enjoying Session Zero and other podcasts on our network, and you value independent creators being able to support themselves and continue to create content for you, consider supporting our network on Patreon at patreon.com/oneshotpodcast.
Your contributions to the One Shot Network helps us to pay for the studio that we record in, the content that we use to represent our work, the hosting of the podcast on the magic internet, and all the spicy water we consume. Becoming a contributor to the One Shot Network Patreon grants you access to bonus content in the network's secret archive, such as some of our personal gaming stories and possibly some of your favorite network characters on our pretend therapy couch.
There are also other perks like the Gift and Book Club, the T-shirt Club, and many more. Please consider contributing today. Hey heroes, looking for a new show to enjoy? Check out Asians Represent. Asians Represent celebrates Asian creators and diversity in the gaming community. Join the hosts Angela Chang and Daniel Kwan as they discuss gaming, genre, and representation with their guests and occasionally argue with each other to the sound of Agatha's beloved Airhorn app.
Heroes, we would love to hear from you and hear your ideas about our show. You can find us on Twitter at @SessionZeroPod, or you can email us at sessionzero@oneshotpodcast.com.
The song you hear right now is Hikari by I Love Brandon off his album Earth and Sky. If you would like to hear more of his work, visit eyelovebrandon.com or find him on Spotify, SoundCloud, Twitter, or wherever else you like to find your chill beats to listen to podcasts to.
Remember, heroes, Session Zero is for sharing information, not for therapy. If you feel like you need support, check out Psychology Today's Find a Therapist database. If you're experiencing a crisis, head into the emergency room or text CONNECT to 741-741 from anywhere in the United States. Be safe out there, and we'll see you in the next session.